Anatomy and Physiology, Gulf Coast State College. Today we're going to continue on with the skeletal system. Particularly, we're going to look at the cranial bones of the skull, which you know are part of something we call the axial skeleton. Let me take a minute to remind you, these figures I'm using are not the same as the PowerPoints you have available in the course management system. Those are designed for you to print out. They're diagrams. They use less ink. They have space off to the side in the PDF format to take notes. You can draw lines to the bones and label things. Don't forget also to fill in the blanks. Ahead of time would be nice, using your text, using your outlines I have for you, which are just packed with great information, using your e-devices or what have you. These PowerPoints I'm using in the skeletal videos are designed to help you in lab and lecture. There's a lot of overlap here. It also allows us to spend more time together than we ever possibly could in class or lab on all these things, so I could point out some goodies, some clinical points you should know, and give out some maybe tips and tricks and mnemonics. Also, I'll do the same thing when it comes to certain sections of the muscle system and certain sections of the blood vessel section as well. The cranial bones, again, the subject of today, and remember your root words. Cranium means brain case, and these are the bones that protect our melon. Now let me stop right there. I'm just trying to have a little fun. Melon means the brain. One year, it's a true story, after class, I was using the word protect the melon, and a student came down and says, "Dr. Gonshore, could you just help me with one thing? I don't know what the melon is." I'm just joking around. The melon is the brain, if I ever say that in class. Here comes our first digital photograph of the skull. And yes, I spent a lot of time having fun over the summer taking the bones from the lab that are used on a lab test. And we got some hopefully pretty good, decent quality digital photographs to help you out. As you know, this is an anterior view of the skull. Looks like this guy's losing his head, doesn't it? Well, anyway, let's move on. And we're going to bust into our first bone, our first cranial bone. We're going to start right here at the front on the top. And if there's a tag on this bone and I say name this bone, we're all going to call it the frontal bone. Why? It's easy, because it's in the front. There's one more thing I want you to know on this slide. It's a little bit difficult to see here, granted. On the test, they would have to label it properly. Or if I showed you a diagram or a figure on one of my lecture tests, it would be much more obvious. But right in here, there is a little hole. I know it's difficult to see, but there's a little hole buried in a little notch. And that hole is called the supraorbital foramen. And it is what it says it is. Let's focus on root words here. First and foremost, foramen. You're going to hear that over and over again in anatomy. A foramen is an opening. It's a hole. Why do we have holes in our heads, in our bones? It's to allow things to get in and out, like blood vessels and nerves. And if we didn't have holes in our head and holes in our bones, we would not be able to exist. The plural for foramen, by the way, is foramina. Now, personally, although I am pretty tough on spelling, because it's important, remember, one letter can make the difference between a heart drug and an antibiotic, and it can make a huge difference on your notes that you're writing on the charts in the hospital. I never take off points for singular versus plural, so that's a little bit of good news there. What does supra mean? Supra means above. Orbit refers to the eye socket, so the supraorbital foramen is a hole just above the eye socket in the frontal bone that allows things to pass through. And what I want to focus on is there's a nerve that comes through there. A lot of people have pain in the forehead, and they'll come to you. As a matter of fact, that's the most common reason patients go to the doctor, is with a complaint of pain. And pain in this area is often from that nerve. It's called a neuralgia. Neuralgia just means nerve pain. So you will learn to find the little notch there. You can actually feel it. Don't do it. I'm just saying you'll be able to feel it. And there's a nerve that comes out of there. You'll be able to do injections and so forth. You know, that's what they do in the pain clinics to help people. So on this slide, name the bone, frontal bone, name the hole. You call it the supraorbital foramen. Here's the side view. In particular, we're going to call this, of course, the right lateral view of the skull. And we're going to look at some of the other cranial bones. First, from the side view, you still should be able to identify the bone in the front. That's the frontal bone. Behind that, let's go to this one here. This is one of your parietal bones. There's one on the other side as well. I love, and you should get to love, the root word parietal. Parietal means the walls or sides of something. And sure enough, the parietal bones are the top sides of your head. Throughout A&P, you're going to hear that word used a lot. There's a lot of parietal this, parietal that, and parietal the other thing. And it's always going to mean the outer part of something. So let that word help you. Another one of the cranial bones we can see here that are protecting our melon. On the lower sides of our head here, this is called the temporal bone. This, of course, is the right one. There's a matching one on the other side. I know what some of you might be thinking. Mommy told you your temples were up in this region. I know, but the temporal bone is located right here. It's the lower flat sides of your head, right kind of under where your ears are. If you were to do this, and I'm not telling you to, because remember, you're not supposed to do anything I say, just learn the stuff. If you were to sort of feel around your ears, I mean, that lower sides of your head, it's flat, and that's where the temporal bones are. A lot more details coming up on the temporal bones shortly, because as you'll see on your lab list and the lecture as well, there are many pieces and parts you must know of that bone. While we're looking at this view, another beautiful bone we must know, outlined beautifully by these orange lines. This is actually a part of a bone called the sphenoid bone. The sphenoid bone is one of the most difficult bones for students to get organized in their brain, but I'm going to help you with some sort of 3D visuals so you can envision this thing and get the sphenoid bone right no matter where we ask you about it, because it protrudes out in many different places. On this right lateral view, those are all the cranial bones I'm going to do for now. One thing you probably have noticed that I want to mention is these bones are outlined very nicely by these yellow orange lines, aren't they? For those of you who looked ahead, you know that these are called sutures, and these are lines of fusion that sort of suture or stitch the bones together, so to speak. On either a lab or lecture test, we should really only show you and test you on these bones if they're well outlined. These, of course, are perfect. Some of the skulls in lab are better than others, but I think it's fair to use ones, to only use ones that are well demarcated. Sometimes we use real human bones. You should check those out carefully in the lab as well. I'll show you a few in this presentation later on. Those usually have the sutures very nicely. They're not painted, but you could see them because they're for real. Although I promise you I was mostly going to use the real deal in this PowerPoint, every once in a while, like now, I'm going to throw in pictures from your book. The beauty of your pictures from your text is they're color-coded. So you can really, I think, go back and forth between the two. Don't rely on these to pass the lab test, please, because that won't work. But these will sure help you as a beginner, and they keep all the bones colored exactly the same no matter what view. And that's, I think, my favorite thing about the whole book. For example, the frontal bone will always be blue. Parietals will always be pink. The temporals will always be purple. The sphenoid, check it out, will always be green no matter which way we flip-flop this skull. Moving on to this superior view. Yes, we're looking down on the top of the skull. This, where my arrow is now, is anterior, if you wish to label it. This back here is posterior. So if we say name the bone here, I hope again you recognize that this is the frontal bone, outlined very nicely by a suture we'll talk about shortly. Then the top sides of the heads, you know again, even from this view, those are the parietal bones. On this slide, let's start to name the sutures, because they love to tag them on the bone test. And I certainly could ask you about them on a lecture test, and they're clinically very relevant. So if we put a tag on this and say, name this line or something like that, you will call this suture between the frontal bone and the parietals the coronal suture. Let the root word help you. What does coronal mean? What's the root word corona? Did you ever look at a bottle of Corona? I know, most of you are too young, and I'm not condoning that behavior in any way, but if you ever saw one, there's a picture of a crown on it. Corona means a crown. And so how I remember this suture is I just put a little Miss America sort of tiara, you know, that little crown they put over her head, and I just put a crown on my head. Wear a Miss America tiara right here, and you'll never forget the coronal suture. How about the suture split right down the middle between the two parietal bones? That's called the sagittal suture. And it got its name because sagittal root word means like an arrow. And it's going straight like an arrow, splitting those parietal bones right in two. On our next slide, I did take a matching picture from your textbook, which shows exactly what I just said with everything labeled beautifully for you. But I posed some great questions for you at the bottom of the slide. Why have sutures? I mean, why do we have these things called sutures? Well, they're to allow for two major things. Number one, they're to let us be born, because there's flexibility. They're not fused solid together when we're coming out of the womb. So it lets our head squish through the birth canal. Also, it allows for brain growth after we're born. Most brain growth, roughly in the first 3 to 5 years, there's rapid brain growth, and so we need some flexibility here. You will also notice that pediatricians will, they'll touch these, they'll feel these, that's called to palpate these, to see if they're fusing at the proper time. Most of these sutures are fused right around 2 years of age, roughly, but they vary depending on which one it is. And then, of course, there are abnormalities that may occur. Suture fusion may occur, let's say, too early. And if one of these sutures, like the coronal or the sagittal, fuses too early, what will happen is the head won't be able to grow in certain directions. You may have seen people that sort of have an egg-shaped head, or maybe have a really broad head across the front, and, you know, we need to be respectful of those situations, because they may have diseases that I want you to do an internet search on called craniosynostosis. That means basically the process of the brain sutures fusing together, but it's happening too soon. And craniosynostosis syndromes, such as Apert's syndrome and Crouzon's syndrome, and no, don't worry, you don't have to know those syndromes for the test, it's just for fun. But if you Google them, you'll see how the heads really are significantly deformed by abnormal suture fusion, and they cause problems. Because if the brain and the nerves inside that skull case can't grow, they actually get crushed, which can lead to various diseases. As an eye doctor, in the past, I saw cases where these bones fuse too quickly, and I'm tracing over the eye socket now, really called the orbit. And in the cases I saw where the bones fused too quickly there, it actually crushed the eye nerve, called the optic nerve, and led to blindness. If you do a web search, and really it's cool stuff, they have all kinds of stuff now that they didn't have when I was growing up. They have these 3D imaging techniques, and you can rotate and flip-flop the 3D images of the skull. They use the 3D digital images in the operating room to do reconstructive surgery with expandable metal plates and screws, and it's really amazing now how they can treat these cases of abnormal suture fusion when we really weren't able to do much years ago. We're now going to flip this skull and take a look at a posterior view so we could finally take a look at this orangish bone called the occipital bone. And here it is, posterior view. Get used to it. You'll see it in the lab. Up top, of course, are two parietal bones that are split by the sagittal suture. But down here, we have what's called the occipital bone. Occiput means the back. And so the back of the head bone is the occipital bone. This suture right here I'm outlining now, that's between the occipital bone and the parietals, has a name. It's called the lambdoid suture. The B is silent. Root words, well, if you were in a fraternity like I was, of course, you might know the Greek alphabet. And if you look at the letter lambda, it looks like an upside down V. So this suture, which is like an upside down V, that's the lambdoid suture. On the next slide, I'm going to flip this skull again. I'm going to flip it over so we're looking at an inferior view still of the occipital bone. So let's take this, flip it over, and here it is. If you want to make notes, this is posterior, this is anterior, and here is our occipital bone from an inferior view. There are two parts specifically you need to know for our course. First off, here I'm outlining with my arrow rounded, smooth knuckles of bone to either side of this hole. You'll be able to see them and feel them in 3D in the lab. Those things are called occipital condyles. Why? Occipital, well, duh, because they're part of the occipital bone. What's a condyle? You must know it. There are many condyles in the human body. I just like to think of them as smooth knuckles of bone, and they're usually smooth knuckles of bone that are used to form a joint. We will see that this will form a joint with the first vertebrae in your neck so that you can rock your head back and forth and say yes. The other prominent feature that you must know on this view is the big hole. Yeah, there's a big hole in the occipital bone, and it's called the foramen magnum. That's easy to remember. Foramen because it's a hole. That's what foramen means. Magnum because it's big. So we have a big hole in our head. Please always remember the big picture. A foramen is a hole for goodies to get in and out, and the foramen magnum has critical importance, because you should know that this is where the brain stem that is inside of our skull blends into the spinal cord, which emerges at this point from that hole in our head. So that's a critical piece of anatomy. In addition, very important blood vessels go through that hole we're going to study, called the vertebral blood vessels, that basically supply blood to the back half of your brain. Now, just when you thought you had it all down, here's what you may see, especially in a laboratory testing situation. We're going to take this bone, we're going to suck it out of the head, pull it off, and slap it all by itself, and there it is. I hope you would still be able to identify it. It's got two key features right on here that you should know. You see the big hole once again, that is the foramen magnum. These smooth knuckles of rounded bone off to the side, those are the occipital condyles. So know on the test, it's not a trick question. You should be able to identify certain bones separately. I will try throughout this whole skeletal deal to pull out all the bones separately that they typically have done separately to my knowledge, so I can try to help y'all, because I want y'all to get an A, as a matter of fact. Finally, on the occipital bone, I wanted to use this picture from your textbook. I love this posterior and slightly inferior view. It's called a postero-inferior view. And please look at the occipital bone. What I want to point out that was not obvious really on any of the other pictures is this little piece right here, this little bump. I want you to know the name. It's called the external occipital protuberance. Don't let that name scare you. External means on the outside. Occipital means it's on this orange occipital bone. A protuberance means something that's protruding. Usually a protuberance is something like a roughened bump for attachment of tendons, and that's exactly what this is for. The reason I point this out is because mommy and daddy might ask you. Now, don't do this because, you know, don't do anything I say to do. But if you were to feel the back of your head, and many of you maybe already had, there's that bump back there, right? And people, some people have little ones, some people have bigger ones. Well, if mommy and daddy ask you, you can now tell them that's the external occipital protuberance. And we'll see that some important ligaments attach there when we get to muscle anatomy. On the next slide, I want to return to our right lateral view of the skull. The lower jawbone is missing, and I want to focus specifically on the temporal bone. If you've looked at your lab and lecture material, you know that there are many important parts of the temporal bone you must know, and we're going to go through them. If on the test this is tagged and we say name the bone, then you name the bone. The bone is the temporal bone. However, if the question is name this part of this bone, it is called the squamous area. Why? Your root word squame means flat or scale-like. Remember, this is the flat spot on the lower side of your head right by your ears. And someone called it the flat spot. Well, not really. You must call it the medical term, the squamous area. Which leads me to another suture we need to know. I'm tracing over it now. It separates the temporal bone from the parietal bone, and someone called the suture, conveniently for my pea brain, the squamous suture, because it's on the flat part of the head. The temporal bone has so many interesting, wonderful, and important parts. I'm going to continue to focus on it on the next slides coming up. What I'm going to do next is take the skull cap off, so to speak, so we can get a slightly different angle and a slightly bigger view. This part of the squamous suture will not be visible, but don't worry about that. Here it comes. This is still the temporal bone. This is still the squamous area, but let's check out some new things. Down here, let's start with this big projection of rounded, rough, meaty bone. That has a name, because you know we name everything in anatomy. It is called the mastoid process. Let your root words help you. Process will be used over and over again. A process is a projection of bone. I love that. PRO process, PRO projection. Typically for muscle attachment. And we'll learn when we get to the muscular system. Yeah, muscles attach there. How do I remember it? Because there's other processes on the temporal bone. I remember it because the mastoid process is the massive one. As a matter of fact, if you were to do this, and of course I'm not telling you to, but if you were to take your hands behind the lower part of your ear on your skull, you can feel those big bumps. You're feeling the mastoid processes. Clinically, they're relevant as well. Sometimes they can get infected. There's kind of like little air cells in there, similar to a sinus. It's not a sinus, but they can get infected. Patient might come in to see you with some redness and pain and tenderness and fever in this area, and you will diagnose them maybe with a mastoiditis and treat them with antibiotics. So yes, this is real stuff. Another process here, but it's more sharp and more pointy. Name that, you will say styloid process. Process why? Projection of bone. Yes, for some muscle attachment. Why styloid? Styloid means something like sharp or pointy or like a stake or a pencil. Many of our digital devices come with a stylus, right? And it's sharp like a stylus. That's how I never forget the styloid process. There are several more of these on other bones in the body that have the same name, and they're kind of going to be sharp and pointy again. More parts we're responsible for. Here you can kind of see an opening or a hole. If we say to name that on the test, you will call that the external auditory meatus. Don't get nervous. Let's break it down. Meatus means in anatomy like a tunnel or a channel. Auditory means ear. External means on the outside. So in English, it's the outer ear hole. Now, don't write outer ear hole on the test. I'll just laugh and put a smiley face on your paper, but you don't get any points. Call it the external auditory meatus. Another part that's visible on the temporal bone is this projection of bone. Notice here is sort of the main hunk of the temporal bone, but this is a projection of it. Therefore, it must be a process. And of course, it has a name. It is the zygomatic process. Why did they call that the zygomatic process? Because processes are often, not always, are often named by what they're pointing to. And in the facial bone studies, we'll learn that this cheekbone here is called the zygomatic bone. So this process is pointing towards it and therefore has been named the zygomatic process. I know, I agree with you. It's confusing. I wouldn't have done it that way either if I got to name it, but I didn't get to name it, so we have to go with the flow. I'm just the messenger. It's the zygomatic process because it's pointing towards the zygomatic bone on the other side of that yellow suture. Let's flip the skull over and look at an inferior view. I hope you can see over here, these are the meaty, massive processes of the temporal bone. Those are the mastoid processes. Here are the thinner, sharper ones. Nice view of the styloid process. But another thing you have to know is this little divot or depression. And the name for a divot or depression in anatomy is a fossa. You'll see that word over and over again. Get to know it. The plural is fossae with an A-E, but fossa, F-O-S-S-A, is singular. This fossa is a divot, and it helps to form a joint like many fossa do. These are called the mandibular fossa. Why? Because we'll see later on that the lower jawbone that you may know is called the mandible fits right into that little divot. Therefore, we call it the mandibular fossa. Just when you thought you had it all down, what do they often do on the test? And it's not a trick. I think it's even easier. They suck the temporal bone out of the head and put it out there separately. But I think if you studied it, it's a piece of cake. Name the bone, answer, temporal bone. Name this area of this bone, squamous area, because it's a flat spot. I encourage you to pick it up and feel it in the lab. You'll be amazed how thin this is. Name this structure or name this bump. That's our massive mastoid process. Here's the pointy one. Name that structure as a review. You will all say styloid process. Outer ear hole? It's external auditory meatus in medical terminology. Then our divot that you could see is the mandibular fossa. Projection of bone coming off, pointing towards the zygomatic bone, you must call that the zygomatic process. I'm not done with the temporal bone yet, believe it or not. Here's an inside view. We're looking from the top down. It's a superior view, technically, and the skull cap, so to speak, has been removed. Big picture items before I give you more details. You should still be able to identify the same bones from the inside. For example, to orient you, this is anterior, this is posterior. Name this bone? Well, it's just a different view, but it's still in the front, so it's still the frontal bone. Name this bone, it's still on the back, still got the big hole in it. This is still the occipital bone. Lower sides of our head, these are still the temporal bones. Another big picture item before I do our last part of the temporal bone. Notice inside this view of the skull, we have sort of one, two, three big divots, big scooped out areas. Check it out in the lab. It's almost like you put your hand in here and take a scoop of brain out of here and a scoop of brain out of here and a scoop of brain out in here. Sure enough, the lobes of the brain which bear the same names as the bones we just studied, sit in those little scooped out areas. A scooped out area or a divot in anatomy, you know, is called a fossa, or plural are called fossae. I want you to know that this big divot in the front is called the anterior fossa. The one in the middle here is called the middle fossa. And the big scooped out divot in the back of the hollowed out interior view of the skull is the posterior fossa. So it's easy. They're named by the directional terms that you already know. And it's clinically relevant. You're going to see, for example, scans, brain scans done on patients, and the MRI scan or whatever is going to come back and say your patient has a posterior fossa tumor. You're going to know immediately a couple things. Of course, you're going to know where it is. It's in this back posterior fossa. I got to tell you something. These are usually bad players. When you hear posterior fossa tumor, everyone starts getting scared and nervous. Why? Because the tumors are often seen in children, scary from the get-go. They're almost always malignant. And if you recall what I mentioned earlier, the brainstem is blending into the spinal cord right at this foramen magnum. And the brainstem, we will learn, contains many of our vital centers that control our heart and our breathing. And if those are damaged by anything, from tumors to strokes, it can mean the end of life. So very scary posterior fossa tumors are. One more part of the temporal bone. Must finish up here. Here is the temporal bone on the right side, outlined by this orange suture. In 3D, please grab onto this big hunky chunk of bone right here. That has a name. That is the petrous portion. Why? Root words help you. Petrous means like a rock or solid. If you're petrified, you're scared stiff, right? Or you may have heard of petrified wood. I know in show and tell, when I was in elementary school, kids would bring in a piece of petrified wood. It's wood that turned to stone. To me, when you look at it in the lab, it looks like the Rocky Mountains. So the Rocky Mountains in your head, those are the petrous portions of the temporal bone. And there's lots of goodies in there. Please take notes and write it down. It's in my lecture PowerPoints, but may as well pencil it down now. Inside here are many goodies. For example, major blood vessels, including carotid artery, including jugular vein. There are also some major nerves that run through there that you'll study later in neuroanatomy. And the hearing goodies, most of the hearing critical parts are inside that Rocky Mountain ridge we call the petrous portion. So if that's injured, you have the risk of doing some serious damage. And you'll see it. I've seen it. I got called to the ER during spring break. The people are doing the balcony crawling thing. Bad idea. They fall from way up high. Get a stat CAT scan done, comes back, says basilar skull fracture, means they got a fracture somewhere through the base of the skull. It often cracks the Rocky Mountains, which are really the petrous portions, and I know therefore they could have nerve damage, they could have severe bleeding, they could have hearing problems, because the mountains are packed with goodies. Please know the petrous portions. I love them. I hope you do too. I think I snagged a picture yet from your textbook. I love it so much. Again, your book keeps everything color-coded. It's so nice. This is a superior view. We're seeing, here's anterior, posterior, all our bones colored. Blue is frontal. Pink is parietal. Purple is temporal. Orange is occipital. Green is sphenoid. And emphasizing here again the petrous portion. Yes, I want you to practice writing it. I don't care if it's on the test or not. You know now, like as on the bottom of the slide, major nerves, major blood vessels, major ear structures, very important. on the next slide, I want to show you one more view of the real deal. I kind of blew it up a little bit. We're still doing the superior view with the skull cap off. This, of course, is posterior down here. And again, big Rocky Mountain ridges. Call it the petrous portion. We're ready to move on to our next bone. Magnified, pretty big here. Skull cap off, superior view. This is anterior. This is posterior, and now we're ready to focus on another one of the cranial bones. I want to look at something I mentioned earlier on a right lateral view, but here it is on the inside of the brain. I'll trace around it this big bone that's shaped like a butterfly is called the sphenoid bone. I love the sphenoid bone. It is shaped like a butterfly. I'll prove it to you later. And it even has wings to help me remember that. This bone, you gotta get the 3D thing going on. I'll help you with pictures now. In the lab, you gotta pick it up, take it out of the head, twist it, turn it, flip it, flop it, and then you'll get it down like you need to know. I picture this like a big butterfly that shoved through my head, basically from one temple to the other temple, and that's basically what it is. A big, hunky, chunky butterfly-shaped piece of bone that runs straight, clean through the middle of your head about and come out where the temples are. Let's go ahead and break this one down. Pieces, parts. First, these sharp ridges I'm on right now. Here's the one on the right. Feel them. They're sharper in the lab. These are called the lesser wings. Why are they called the lesser wings? Because lesser, usually in anatomy, means smaller, or it might mean below. In this case, they're smaller. I'll prove to you that they're the smaller wings on another picture coming up. The butterfly actually has two pairs of wings. Here's bigger, hunkier, chunkier, meatier wings, and these have a name. You will call them the greater wings. Those are actually what poked out the side of the head in that little area I outlined earlier when we first saw the sphenoid bone. So lesser wings, sharp ridges. Greater wings, bigger hunks of meat down below. Now I'll move my pointer to a hole. There's a hole and there's a matching hole. And it's easy. You already know half the answer. A hole in anatomy is a foramen for stuff to get through. In this case, the optic nerve or the eye nerve goes through that hole. So it's called the optic foramen. I know a lot of you in lab and in lecture could be saying, well, what about all these other holes? Well, yeah, they all have names. They all have all goodies going through them too, like vessels and nerves. But the good news is for you, for both lecture and lab, you only have to know one hole in the butterfly, in the sphenoid bone, and it's the optic foramen. So don't get nervous. Once we put the tag or the pointer on a hole, you just say optic foramen, you're going to get it right, because we're really cutting you a lot of slack here. In med school, I had to learn all this stuff, but thank goodness we're just doing a survey course here. Next on the list, I'm going to outline here with my pointer as I talk. I'll continue to outline. You got a picture in your mind's eye and feel it in the lab. This is sort of a central chunk of the butterfly. I think of it like the body of the butterfly. It's a bony, hunky chunk of the sphenoid bone, and this thing that I keep drawing like a square around has a name. If we put a tag in this area and say name this chunk of this bone or something like that, it is called the cella turcica. In Greek, turcica means Turkish and cella means saddle. And if you look at it from different angles in 3D, it kind of does look like a saddle. I even Googled Turkish saddle to see what it was shaped like, and I guess it really does look like a saddle. In the middle of the saddle, there is a divot. You know right away the name for a divot or a depression in anatomy is a fossa. This is called the pituitary fossa. If the pin or tag is right there and they say name the divot or name the depression, That means name the divot. So you will call it the pituitary fossa. And the name tells you what is sitting in the divot. What is sitting in the saddle? The pituitary gland, which you learned in grade school probably, is one of the master endocrine glands in the body. So when I put it all together in a visual, I just picture this butterfly flying around with its two pairs of wings, the lesser wings, the greater wings, and then there's a saddle, which is kind of the body of the butterfly, and then I picture my pituitary gland sort of flying around, riding in the saddle, which is really the pituitary fossa. Well, maybe that's just me, but that's the visual I have. Whatever works for you. Just when you thought you had it all down, what do they do to you on the test day? They suck the butterfly out of the skull and show it to you separately. But don't get nervous. I think once you've studied it, it's even easier this way. What's the view here? Well, we're looking at it from the top down, so it's sort of a superior view, but also a little bit we're looking at it from a posterior view as well. So let's do the parts. I think it's easier, like I said. Name these structures. They're the littler, sharper wings. You will call them the lesser wings. The bigger, hunkier, chunkier, meatier ones, those pair of wings are the greater wings. In anatomy, greater means usually bigger and or above, and clearly I think you agree with me, they're bigger. They're so big they're actually poking out to the lateral sides of our skull where we saw them earlier on a right lateral view in an area that you might call your temples. What else was on the list? If I outline this meaty chunk of bone and say name this chunk, this is the sella turcica, right? That's the saddle. Name the divot, pituitary fossa. Name the hole, optic foramen. It's the only hole, the only foramen on the sphenoid bone you have to know. To help understand this bone better, let's take a look with another view. Here comes an anterior view. It really does look like a butterfly now. The easiest thing to identify from this view are the wings. Clearly now you can see the littler, thinner, sharper wings. You will call them the lesser wings. Then the big, meaty wings, almost looks like on a dragon. These are the greater wings. The bony body chunk in the middle is the sella turcica. Can't really see the divot that well, but you know it's the pituitary fossa. And then, of course, any opening, the only opening that we're going to tag on this bone is the optic foramen. I wanted to hook this all together also with the right lateral view of the skull to show you that these greater wings do poke out the sides of our head. And here we are. This is that lateral external surface of the greater wing of the sphenoid bones. Finally, I wanted to also hook this with your textbook figures, color-coded, always in green. There it is with many of the parts labeled. That is the sphenoid bone. We're ready to move on to our sixth and final cranial bone on this slide. Let me orient you. This is a high mag view. The skull cap has been removed. It's a superior view. We're looking down into the skull. This is anterior. This is posterior. Here's the big butterfly sphenoid bone that we just dissected to pieces. But what about just in front of it, outlined with an orange suture? Name that bone. It is the ethmoid bone. Several parts we need to know. First, a favorite thing to tag on the lab test is this pointy projection of bone right here. If you feel it in real life in the lab, it's kind of sharp actually. It's called the crista galli. Why? Crista in Greek means like a crest, like the crest of a bird. And galli, I think, means a rooster or something. So they named it bird's crest, but the medical terminology is crista galli. Off to the sides where my arrow is now is a plate of bone with holes in it. That's right, with foramina in it. That plate of bone with holes is called the cribriform plate. Why? Because it's a plate of bone, and cribriform means sieve-like. Like if you have a sieve in your kitchen, it's got holes in it. That's how it got the name cribriform plate. Couple of very important things here. your nose nerves come through those holes. When you learn the nose nerve, it's really called the olfactory nerve. Well, all those little nerves come up through the top of your nose and they pierce those little holes in this plate of bone and they connect to the smell pathway that you will learn in detail later on in anatomy. So your nose nerves come through those holes in that plate. Then, just when you thought you had it all down, what do they do? Well, we could suck this bone out of the head separately and put it on a test station. So picture either we can take this bone and suck it out through the top of the skull, kind of bone saw this thing out and just pull it out the top. We may also, if you wish, suck this chunk of bone out anteriorly from behind the bridge of your nose. And here it comes on the next slide. There it is, tends to show up on a lab test a lot. This is a right lateral view. Let me help you get oriented. This is anterior, this is posterior, and this bone is the ethmoid bone. Kind of like a big rectangular chunk of bone, again, shoved in your head behind the bridge of your nose, if you will. Name this part. You must all say crista galli. Clearly now, I think you see it looks like the crest of the bird. It's hard to see the cribriform plate in this view. I got better views coming up. These are the lateral sort of walls of the ethmoid bone. We'll see later on that they actually form the inner surface or the medial surface of our eye sockets. But probably the main questions that they would ask you on this view of this bone would be, name the bone, you say ethmoid, name this structure, you say crista galli. And if they shove it in the holes in the plates off to the side of the bone, it's the cribriform plate. Let's check it out in this beautiful view. I love this picture from your textbook. It shows you this funky, chunky ethmoid bone in a sort of an X-ray vision view. You're seeing through the bridge of your nose. And so in orange, very nicely, is the ethmoid bone. Here are the lateral surfaces of the ethmoid bone, which really form the medial wall of the eye socket called the orbit. Crest of the bone, everyone gets that right. That's the crista galli. Come on, it looks like the crest on a cardinal or something. Some new things on the list that we could see now in this view, you must know. This plate, this thin plate of bone that's part of the ethmoid bone, that's perpendicular to the ground, somebody called the perpendicular plate. Why? Because it's a flat plate of bone and it's perpendicular to the ground. It is the top part of the bony nasal septum. So write that down. It's the superior part of the bony nasal septum. This piece here is called the middle nasal turbinate. They're little like curly cues that come off and poke into the nasal cavity. Nasal refers to the nose because they are poking into the nasal cavity. Turbinate means like turbulence, like on an airplane, things getting swirled around. There are three pairs of nasal turbinates. Bony curly cues that kind of curve into the nasal cavity, and they do just what they say they do. They help to swirl and warm and moisten the air, and that's why I use the name turbinate. I know your book uses conche. I don't care if you use it. It is a correct synonym, but nobody calls it that in the real world. Everybody calls them turbinates. As a matter of fact, you might have heard of people who have a deviated nasal septum, right? This is blocking part of their nasal cavity. And they go in for a procedure. And you'll see on the operating slip report, it'll say, you know, Mr. Jones went in for repair of a deviated septum. They call that a septoplasty. And for turbinate reduction. They don't say conche, they say turbinate reduction. So they go in there, and in English, they straighten out the nasal septum and they grind down these curlicues to open up the nasal cavity so you can breathe better. As I mentioned, there are three pairs of turbinates. Purpose again is to moisten and warm and humidify the air, if you don't think that function is important. For those of you who have ever been up north or lived up north, did you ever take a deep breath in on a really super cold day with dry air? It almost hurts your lungs, doesn't it? And it can damage your lung tissue, so it is important to warm and moisten the air. Let's look at the turbinates. There are ones on the bottom. They are called the inferior nasal turbinates because they're the nasal turbinates on the bottom. It ain't rocket science. Notice they're not colored in orange. Therefore, they are not part of the ethmoid bones. Believe it or not, embryologically, the inferior nasal turbinates are bones in and of themselves. They are separate bones that are classified as facial bones. But there they are. The next set of curlicues up are in orange, are therefore part of the ethmoid bones and called the middle nasal turbinates. The superior nasal turbinates are embedded so way up high, they're difficult to see in the lab. They're not seen at all in this view. Let me give you a tip right now. When you see this view in the lab, always work your way from the bottom up and you'll get it right. When you see the curlicue, start on the bottom. You know the ones on the bottom are the inferior ones, so you'll call them inferior nasal turbinates. They're probably the easiest, biggest ones to see. Then the next ones up have to be the middle. And if some way they manage in the lab to show you three, you would have to call the next one up superior. But my mnemonic is bottoms up. Don't take that the wrong way. I don't condone that behavior in any way. If you learn these from the bottom up, you'll be in good shape. So bottoms up to y'all. Coming up next, another beautiful slide from your textbook. One of my favorites to summarize this challenging area. And here it is. This is a medial view looking in from the right side in what we call a sagittal section. This is the sagittal plane. When you slice through the body in this direction, in this plane, it's called the sagittal plane. Since we're going through the middle, this is called a mid-sagittal section. This, of course, would be anterior. This would be posterior. And we're looking into this skull to see, number one, let's focus on the orange ethmoid bone and its pieces you need to know. Easy, number one, the crest, you will all call the crista galli. Kind of tough to see in a side view, but this thin plate of holy bone is the cribriform plate. That's where your nose nerves are piercing through. Then the turbinates we talked about on the top, superior nasal turbinate, just underneath of that is the middle nasal turbinate, and those are parts of the ethmoid bone. You know there are three sets of turbinates. The one on the bottom is the inferior nasal turbinate, just like the name tells you. Please remember, this is not part of the ethmoid bone. It is classified separately by itself, actually as a facial bone. But there they are. You can kind of picture it all working. Question on the bottom of the slide, what's the purpose of the nasal turbinates? You know, because I already told you on the other slide. Well, I have another great clinical question to throw out at you that I want you to know. Let's say you're the nurse working triage in the ER and two people come in at the same time and they both had some kind of facial smash up. Maybe someone was hit with a baseball bat and maybe someone was in a car accident. One person comes in and they got this blood coming out their nose. The other person comes in, maybe a tinge of blood, but otherwise looks like kind of some clear, just liquidy stuff that you think maybe is just snot. So you take the person who's bleeding and say, man, you're bleeding, you're in trouble, you're bleeding, we're going to take you first. And a person with just a little bit of blood and the other clear fluid that you think is just a runny nose and it might be just a cold, you put them off to the side and say, well, you can wait. You don't have lots of blood. Did you make a mistake? Oh, yeah, you made a huge mistake. Because what happened? And what's that clear fluid coming out of their nose? Well, probably what happened is they cracked the cribriform plate and the clear fluid that's now coming out, draining out their nose is actually cerebrospinal fluid or brain water in, I guess, layman's terms. And while they're sitting there in the hallway on the stretcher for 4 hours, bacteria are crawling up that broken plate of bone and getting in there and causing a meningitis or a brain abscess. and you will never win that case. And there's always a lawyer in the family, trust me. Now you won't make that mistake. And there's a quick test you can do in the ER to find out. You'll be trained how to do this test. I encourage you to do a web search on it to see if there's cerebrospinal fluid in the nasal drainage. It's called the HALO test. And if you put some of that drainage from their nose on this piece of paper, looks like a coffee filter kind of paper, if there's brain water mixed in with the blood, it will spread out in a sort of a halo pattern or a target pattern. I don't have a picture of one on my slides, but please, please Google that and check that out. You never want to make that mistake. So yes, you're studying this not just to get an A, you're studying it to help people. Now get ready for the next slide, because here is what you might see on the lab test day. Boom! Same sort of thing, same side view, same sagittal section. The skull cap has been removed, but this is a section where they do sometimes tag all three nasal turbinates. Remember, always do bottoms up, and that will get you places. This one here on the bottom in the nasal cavity, this is the inferior nasal turbinate. Next one up is the middle nasal turbinate. And then the next one up, it's kind of flat and nearly not as big or prominent. That is the superior nasal turbinate. So explore this in lab. You can kind of get your probe and kind of hook it underneath those little curlicues like a fish hook and get to know them in 3D so you don't miss it on the lab test. Here it is on a picture from your book, sucked out of the head again. This is an anterior view. Clearly we have labeled superior and inferior. I'm trying to help you tremendously again, just like I did with the sphenoid. You've got to get the 3D thing going on to ethmoid or you're going to miss out on it. Name the parts. The crest, clearly the crista galli. The bony flat plate that forms the top half of the bony nasal septum that's perpendicular to the ground, you will call it a perpendicular plate. This hunk of curlicue bone here, you know, is the middle nasal turbinate, and very, very, very hard to see the superior nasal turbinate. The lateral surface of the ethmoid bone actually forms the inner or the medial wall of the eye socket. To me, you want to know my visual? To me, this looks like a vampire, like Dracula. And so I picture the crest, that's like the on the top of his head, something he's wearing, and then this middle piece, the perpendicular plate is his body, and then these things off to the side, like that's his cape, that's his whatever. I don't know, y'all watch those vampire movies these days. To me, it looks like a vampire, but come up with your own thing, a picture that works for you. Here is a superior view. This is nice. Top down, okay? Top down. This is anterior. This is posterior. Here's the crista galli. But the main purpose of this view on our last slide to tie up our cranial bones of the skull is to check out all the holes in this holy bone. You know, of course, this plate of bone off to the side is the cribriform plate. And all those holes are for the smell nerves, which you're really going to call later on down the road the olfactory nerves. That's going to wrap up the cranial bones of the skull. Next time we get together, we'll do the facial stuff.